Brody, Senator Szymanski, myself, Senator Faiks. The first bill up will be House Bill 394. We heard this bill on Tuesday. Mr. Christensen, will you come and tell the committee the benefit of your research? The issue here, and this is relating to the utilization of pollock and prohibiting the waste of pollock taken in commercial fishery, the issue is whether the Department of Fish and Game had the authority to confiscate the roe as part of the enforcement procedures and the fine that's in the bill. There's a fine in the bill of a Class A misdemeanor, and there's an additional, we were talking about putting an additional fine in there of a dollar amount and decided that they could do that, but what we want to know is whether the catch could be confiscated. Mr. Christensen.
Madam Chairman, for the record, my name is Charles Christensen. The members will find in their packets copies of AS 1605, 190, and 195. These statutes provide that when there is a violation of a fish and game statute or regulation, the catch and the gear that's used to aid in the violation is subject to forfeiture, either in a criminal proceeding or in a civil proceeding in rem.
Okay, in rem.
Okay, and we also know that a Class A misdemeanor for an organization, the fine is up to $100,000 or three times the gain realized. So that also solved our problem on that issue. Is there any other discussion on this bill? Does the department wish to make further testimony?
Okay.
Madam Chairman, I would move you to House Bill 394 to pass in committee with individual recommendations.
Any objections? House Bill 394 is passed in committee with individual recommendations. Now we have before us a potential CS for Senate Bill 252. Senate Bill 252 would left the committee several weeks ago, earlier, and what we were doing is, how many potential CSs do we have? We have this potential CS. It left the committee, and it was sitting in the Rules Committee when the Senate President heard from some constituents and we in Anchorage that would ask us to consider an amendment that would extend the bill and the use of retirements and divorces to municipal employees also. And that's what the proposed CS in front of you does. It was requested by the Senate President. We have it here, and it would be up to us whether to adopt the CS and adopt this amendment. And we have folks that wish to testify. Mr. Stahlnaker, would you like to testify for the department first on this bill?
Are you hearing the testimony? Are you? Okay, we'll try it again.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, I'm Bob Stahlnaker, Deputy Director for the Division of Retirement and Benefits. As I understand the CS, it would add language similar to a bill that has been having testimony on the House side.
And that is House Bill 568.
The department supports the amendment, supports the House bill. The provisions clarify the statutes, the statute being amended, to exclude public plans who have a definition of QDRO from having to accept the definition of QDRO by the federal government. The purpose, as was disclosed in House State Affairs for AS 0938-017C, which is the provision being amended, that provision was first put into statute from House Bill 568, or excuse me, House Bill, or Senate Bill 508, back in 1988. The purpose for that was to protect QDROs from attachment also, and also to provide a definition for QDRO if QDRO were not defined in retirement plans. The definition provided under Federal Statute 414P is more restrictive than the definitions provided in certainly the public employees, the teachers, and the other retirement plans administered by the state. The Attorney General's opinion that was given when 508 was passed was that the public employee plans for the state were excluded from having to have the same definition as provided by the federal government. 414P is provided under ERISA, and public plans are excluded from having to comply to ERISA. So the public plans are not required to have the definition as provided under the federal government. The public employee plans of the state follow their own definition of QDRO and do not follow 414P anyway. So this provision, as we see it for the state plans, would clarify that, as well as it would make it clear that other public plans in the state that have a definition for TDROs and that have been applying that definition for years and years and years would still be able to continue with the business and the operation of their plan as they've been doing for years.
Okay, let the record show Senator Halpert has joined us just in time, Senator. We are considering a possible CS for Senate Bill 252, and Mr. Stallnaker is testifying on qualified domestic relations orders. In case anybody didn't know what QDROs were, I didn't
remember
know
that.
Until. Okay. All right. In using full disclosure here, what has occurred was that several years ago, the state, of course, we passed a law that the state retirement programs, PERS and TERS, did not have to use the federal definition. Therefore, if you are a teacher and you get divorced, your ex-spouse does not get access to your retirement fund, if it's awarded, until you retire, okay? Well, what we did not do is extend this to municipal retirement funds, i.e. the firemen and the policemen. One of our colleagues was awarded a QDRO, and when they went and presented their order to the municipal appropriate retirement fund, they realized that they had to pay prior to the spouse retiring, and they got upset, and it was their union now who is requesting that we extend this to all local government pension funds. Is that fair? I think, yes, Senator.
Where does SBS fit in?
We're on teleconference, sir.
Where does SBS fit?
What?
Through the chair, Senator Szymanski.
Yeah.
The supplemental benefits system qualifies under federal code, and the SBS in their plan document has a definition of QDRO that is very similar to 414P. But SBS has its definition of QDRO in the plan document, and it follows that definition.
I was going to hope we exempted divorce.
Is there further questions for Mr. Stallnaker?
So.
Senator Halpert.
Okay. Can the individual get the money or get anything out of this account?
Mr. Stallnaker.
Through the chair, Senator Halpert. Yes, sir. The spouse who is awarded a benefit under QDRO still has all access to that benefit as is currently provided and has been provided under the provisions of the public plan. So when the member, in essence, as Senator Fakes explained, retires, exercises the option to retire, then the spouse gets the benefit as provided by the QDRO at that point in time.
They both get the benefit at the same time. Right now, the benefit can occur to the ex-spouse as soon as the eligibility for retirement comes up, whether the person chooses to retire or not.
So the person doesn't choose to retire. They therefore can't get any benefits.
Right.
They have benefits due to their ex-spouse, which they have to pay.
If the ex-spouse goes and asks for them.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Halpert, under 414P, the federal guidelines say a recipient of a QDRO has access to the pension benefit at the earliest possible time that the plan allows. Now, on our plans, as an example, under the early retirement provision, a member would receive a lesser benefit if they retired at age 50, as an example. And they may not even be planning to retire at age 50. So in the QDRO proceedings, the benefit amount is determined as a property settlement based on the person retiring at normal age. Well, this is the way we've always dealt with it in the past. Then when the person retires at age 55, then the spouse would get the benefit. Under 414P, that spouse could come in when the member reached age 50 and request the QDRO portion of the benefit. Even though the member is not retired, is still accruing service, is still an active member under the system. Under the public employee system, QDRO does not give a spouse right as a member to the system. It gives them a right of a property settlement or a right of a benefit from the system, but they're not considered a member. In other words, they don't get health insurance. That's all taken into consideration when the QDRO amount is determined. So currently the benefit is not even available to the QDRO spouse until the member opts to retire.
But if we change under this bill, will that change that then?
so that they can get the benefit?
Under this bill, it doesn't affect the state's policies, except that it clarifies what we're doing. It extends this and more clearly extends it. I might think personally that the public plans have a very good case to say they're exempted also. But what this does is it clarifies that if they've had definition of QDRO, it extends to them too. That they could continue with the policies they've had in the past in dealing with QDROs and not be subject to provisions forced on them that even the federal government doesn't force on them.
I thought I understood it until that last presentation.
Well, try
let me see if I can understand one more time.
It is complicated.
If under the current status, as a divorce occurs, the spouse is awarded 50% of the retirement.
Well, we don't know.
Okay, but let's just say that.
If it is.
That's the general stuff.
But let's say in general terms they're awarded 50% of the retirement, which is kind of the way it happens. Then they can do it several different ways. They could say 50% of the retirement at the point in time which retirement benefits are paid. QDR can say that. There it can say you can get 50% of the time amount, you're entitled to 50% of it when it's available, as you stated earlier. Now, if that occurs, my understanding what would happen then is if the person's still in the system, contributing as part of the system, the spouse is no longer linked to them. They sever the fund, basically. They structure the fund, sever out what would be her 50% or his. They pay the benefits based on that, and they allow the other half to continue on and the contribution to continue. Isn't that basically the way it works?
Through the chair, Senator Szymanski, QDROs can be structured in any number of ways.
Most of them are not that too specific, but they generally just allow for stuff to happen.
Generally, what is done is a present value of the value of that benefit is determined.
Right.
And it's determined on a normal retirement date, not an early retirement date. It's saying, if this person were to retire, you've been married for 12 years, there's 12 years of benefits that have accrued for a normal retirement. What's the present value of that? And then we'll split it 50%. So some QDROs are a flat dollar amount that says you'll take out $400 a month out of the retiree's check, regardless of what the amount is, and give it to the spouse because that's the present value as determined by the court that's given to the QDRO. Some may be a percent to where if the retiree retires early, the spouse actually gets a lesser amount than if the retiree were to retire at a normal time. So there's all kinds of different ways that the court can structure the QDRO and the recognition of that property value. The attorneys will generally work with us on the present value calculation. And, you know, what's the normal retirement date? And because of the way the plan is structured, our plan, we've not had difficulties with this issue. Because it's recognized going in, it's understood, and it's just calculated that way. So I guess to answer your question, there's really no normal way that it's handled. We even get calls from attorneys asking us how to structure it because it's a very complex and confusing, you know, issue.
Please let the record show that Senator Pierce has joined the committee and we are at full strength. Senator Howell.
What are most private plans do? How would this be if we're not somebody working with things going?
Through the chair, Senator Halford, private plans are required by federal law to comply with ERISA. This is a provision, 414P is a provision of ERISA. Therefore, private plans comply with 414P.
Keep going,
which would mean that they've had to structure their plans to provide a benefit at the earliest possible time that a benefit could be provided under a QDRO, at the request of the QDRO recipient.
So private plans require payment at the earliest possible time?
Yes, sir.
We would be doing something different than the private plans do if we pass this legislation?
No, it's not that easy. The state's plans already do something different. It's just only some of the state's plans, some of the public plans do something different.
Well, the state's plans do, the municipal plans don't.
Right, well, what happened is the Attorney General feels that there's a good case that can be made, and looking at the legislative intent when we gave an exemption for PERS and TERS, that the municipal pension plans are included. But this just absolutely positively clarifies it, that they are included. Because right now, some of the government plans are, and some of them, it's cloudy.
Is this legislation retroactive, or would it have a retroactive application?
Through the chair, Senator Halford, no retirement legislation would be retroactive unless specifically stated. I believe that's been a finding of the Attorney General's office. However, this bill clarifies 0938-017, which is not retirement statute. It's an exemption statute, and it was meant to exempt QDROs from attachment. That's why it's kind of backwardly impacted the retirement systems. So I couldn't answer that specifically. I think you'd need legal aid to give you some kind of their interpretation on any kind of retroactivity application.
I don't know what you're going
to do. Not sure how.
Well, my question is how this would affect a divorce that's already occurred or occurred under one set of laws, if we're changing the laws after that effect.
Through the chair, Senator Halford, I can only speak for the state. Perhaps Mr. Wentworth might speak for the police and fire system in Anchorage. The state would treat QDROs the same way as we always have and would continue in the future, regardless of this legislation. This just clarifies. I would add one other thing regarding your question on private plans and their compliance with ERISA. The federal government excluded public plans from ERISA for some very good reasons. Because of the oversight by state legislatures, for one reason. There's purpose behind the federal government excluding public plans and treating them different than they do private plans.
I realize that.
So that's consistent.
Mr. Stalnaker, but if we wanted to make sure that no pending divorce action or orders, QDROs, no past court orders on QDROs are affected, then you would suggest that we get legal to look at this and, if necessary, amend it to make absolutely certain that no past ones would be affected.
Madam Chairman, I certainly would think that would be advisable, because I certainly couldn't express any opinion on that.
Okay, further questions to Mr. Stalnaker? Thank you, sir, very much. Can you help me with this, Arthur? You're over there. Body language-wise, tells me. Mr. Snowden.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Art Snowden, Administrative Director of the Alaska Court System. If this is intended as a clarification of present state law, then everything would be affected, because you're clarifying, not changing. If it's intended as a change, no past orders would be affected.
Arthur, it seems to me we have to have that. So the committee would have to determine the policy call on that, whether they want to just clarify existing law or whether they want to determine this as a brand new change, and then we have to make sure that that's the way it did it. Yeah, I understand.
You forgot Mr. Stone is also an attorney.
Is there further testimony? Ms. Lister, do you wish to testify on this bill? You haven't signed up. So I don't want to force you if you don't want to.
No, I just want to make a comment. I think at this time, I'm sort of on hold on this one.
Ruth, you need to identify yourself.
My name is Ruth Lister, representing Alaska Women's Commission. My concern would be, and I understand that the legislature, of course, impacts the retirement benefits of state employees, but my concern would be that that spouses have access at the earliest possible time to those retirement benefits. However, already certain groups are included, and we're just adding some more, and so I'd like to see the whole thing changed so that private and public plans conform to the federal statute. So at this time, I'm just taking a neutral position on this because I don't agree with the direction that it's taking.
Great. Any comments for Ms. Lister? Questions? Is there someone on teleconference who wishes to speak?
There is Lee Wentworth, and because of Alaska's problems, He has heard very little of the testimony. However, he can give testimony if he'll be able
to. Okay, sir, if you can hear, please, Mr. Is it Wentworth?
Wentworth.
Wentworth, if you will give your testimony to us, sir.
I can talk to him.
Help him.
Mr. Wentworth, are you ready? Okay, would you please give your testimony now? And thank you, and I'm sorry for the problem.
Panama Set, Police Fire Retirement Board. I have Bob Nickel, Vice Chairman of the Retirement Board, here to testify today. Jack Gallion, who is a retired chief, and John Cowdery, who will represent the municipal administration. The first to speak will be Mr. Nickel.
All right, thanks, and committee members, before I open up, I should advise you that we have heard only a very small percentage of what has been coming over the air because of problems with the telephone, apparently. So I do not know what's gone before, and I might be a little redundant, but I'm going to be very brief. I'm a detective sergeant for the Anchorage Police Department and vice chairman of the Police and Fire Retirement Board here in Anchorage. I'm elected by the policemen, and I represent over 800 active and retired policemen and firemen and their families. What I'd like to speak to is Senate Bill 252 and request that you consider adopting wording similar to that is in House Bill 586 that's been presented by, correction, that's 568 that's been presented by Representative Boucher. Basically, from our viewpoint, for several years now, we have been aware of quadro requirements from where we would have to make payments to divorced spouses. And the federal regulations allow us to be exempted from the provisions of ERISA. And we, in our municipal code, have some provisions that basically have the same provisions applied to PERS and TERS under state code, which provides that we will not pay any benefits until the member actually retires. Through some oversight, and I'm not sure exactly where that is, we were not included in the state code that provides that coverage to PERS and TERS. However, that has been our practice under the municipal code for several years. We discovered in reviewing our laws that we currently weren't covered by this, and our request here is generated by that discovery on our part. We are not suggesting anything that would have any impact in terms of revenue on the state, would not change anything that we presently do in terms of our procedures, and we're not taking away anything from anybody that they would have realistically expected to have had.
Anything that's been done previously
is
disturbed.
The reason that we request this is that it would have some impact if people started requesting an early payment for our members actually retired, because we have actuarially based our contribution from the members and from the taxpayers on the fact that the average police
just
and fireman retired after 21 years of service. And for us to have to make payments to divorce
spouses
for the person who retired would cause increased contributions on the part of the member, policeman, and fireman, and also increased contributions on the taxpayer who also makes contributions to the system. I'm going to turn the mic over, unless you have some questions, to Jack Gallion, who is also a member of the board and elected by the fire department.
Our only problem is Ramona.
Do you have any questions?
But I think I have
I do not know if you do or not, because I cannot hear anything coming back. I'm going to give the mic over to fireman, or retired battalion chief, Gallion.
You don't force them. Hello, Madam Chair. This is Jack Gallion, retired battalion chief with the Anchorage Fire Department. We are incommunicado right now. We don't know if you're hearing us or if we're not hearing you. And I won't take
Sir, we are hearing you just fine.
because he never is going to get the benefit anyway. He's going to get the same amount of benefit when he retires.
There's nothing additional of substance that I would like to add to what Mr. Nickel just expressed.
The members of the
Anchorage Fire Department, of course, are concerned about the possible ramifications of this so-called gap in the statute, which makes us somewhat vulnerable, possibly. I think your support, your assistance in Senate Bill 252 to include some of the language of House Bill 568 would satisfy us and preserve the integrity of our system. I'm quite sure that you people know the ramifications, possible ramifications of not having this this bill enacted. Let me get off the phone now, but before I do, may I ask you a couple of questions? I would like to know, where does this bill go now, and when will it go there? I'm not familiar with the way you people function in the roots down there.
This is Jan. Can you hear me? Hello, this is Jan. Can you hear me?
No, we cannot hear you. If you can hear me, we'll get in contact with you at some later date. But my questions were...
One moment, sir. She's going to talk to you directly. One moment.
Okay, the bill, if it leaves this committee, will go immediately to the Rules Committee, and then Senator Sturzelewski would have to decide when to calendar the bill for a full Senate vote. Once the Senate has voted on it, then it goes to the House and has to go through the whole House process. And it's tough going at this late date to move a bill like this through both houses. But this is the last committee of substance stop prior to the bill going to the floor of the Senate. What we're trying to do here is work on language so that the bill, we'd like to pass the bill out, I think. I'm getting the feeling that the majority of the committee would like to pass the bill out with the amendments that you folks recommend. But we do not wish to interfere with any current QDROs that are out there that you might have to pay. So we're going to put an amendment on the bill that will make it very clear that this bill takes into effect on the day that it's affected and that no existing QDROs would be affected. And so I think that's the way we're going to handle those QDROs that are in the gray area right now. In other words, we aren't going to handle them. We're going to toss those back to you, but there won't be any new ones coming to you in the future. Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to turn you back on and go back to the committee. So give us 10 seconds so that we can switch you back on so the whole committee can hear Mr. Cowery's testimony. The fireman thought that was okay.
Yeah, this is John Cowdery. I don't know if you can hear me yet or if we're back on, but I am a representative, also serve as a trustee to the Anchorage Police and Fire Retirement Board. The administration, it's unanimous in all the board members. There's four administration people and four police and firemen on the board. We're all support this. The total administration does. We feel that there's would be significant additional administration burden and cost would occur if we were required to pay benefits to an alternate prior to the retirement of that member. We feel that we'd like equal treatment of the government pension plans with respect to this provision. We feel that's very essential. And we feel that the potential conflict between state and local laws should be handled legislatively rather than costly litigation. And that's about the end of my testimony. We appreciate the fact that this will not be retroactive to take into consideration anything that's pending now. And that will be the end of our testimony unless you have questions.
If you have questions, you have to go to the telephone. Okay, great. Tell them we're fine. Is it the wish? Who, Mr. Stallnaker?
Yeah.
Mr. Stallnaker, would you please?
Hello. This is, hi. We do not have any questions. We thank you.
Senator Smansky.
Let me try to see if I understand the net effect of what occurs if this law passes, which is clarifying what everybody believes to be the law.
No.
Not clarifying it, huh?
Well,
it changes the law.
There's disagreement whether it clarifies it or changes it.
But in any case, I'm having a tough time understanding what the net effect of it all is going to be. The way I read it, no matter what happens under a QDR that comes down, they split a person, the spouse is awarded, if they're awarded 10 cents, 50%, 90%, 100%, whatever it may be of the retirement, they get a piece of the action. Now, once that determination is made by the court, it comes to you as a QDR, usually has some type of direction to it, which you guys end up structuring to implement. But if we pass this bill, it's not going to affect let's say it's my case, and if my spouse, ex-spouse, comes in and she gets her piece of the action on it, 50% of it, my 50% stays in the system. I continue on for the next 20 or 30 years, 20 years in the system. Whether or not whatever she does has no effect on my 50% because you segregated it. So whatever action is taken here really only affects the retirement program itself and or the ability of the spouse to reach in and get a hold of their money at some point in time. Now, are we pretty much tracking up to that point?
Through the chair, Senator Szymanski. I think if we were talking about a defined contribution plan where you have a fixed dollar in at any point in time, then yes, that would be correct. The public employees and teachers plans are not defined contribution plans, and as I understand, the peace officer plan in Anchorage is not. It's a defined benefit plan. Benefits are determined when the person retires. Now, there are certain assumptions that can be made at an earlier time when a QDRO is developed. Those assumptions are based on, the amount that is determined for the QDRO is based on those assumptions. And those assumptions could be very broad, depending upon what the court agrees to, what we agree to.
Okay. You cannot define those into the future, but you can define them on any given day today, as an example. You can define what that benefit is, what its net worth is on any day. Isn't that correct?
We can develop a present value,
of
an accrued benefit at a point in time, yes.
Right.
Sir.
Now, if we change under the current law, if a person walks into a retirement program, hands you the QDR, says, determine that for me, and give me my payoff so I can head off to Vegas with it, you feel the current law says that you have to do that?
Through the chair, Senator Szymanski, no. The current law does not require the state to do that.
What about municipalities?
I would argue that the municipalities are covered under the same justification as the state. However, it is unclear, and that's why the police and fire have presented this bill, to clarify the intent of the original language in the first place.
Okay, well, let's play out the scenario. Let's say that in the case of municipalities, they are not covered, and a person can walk in and say, calculate it for me, present value, give me my check, I'm going to Vegas. They sit there and do that, write out the check, which they're apparently not too happy about wanting to do, but does it really have a net effect on mine or anybody else's future retirement?
Through the chair, Senator Szymanski, if the benefit assumptions are based on the fact that the member will retire at a normal age, receive an unreduced benefit by virtue of early retirement. Therefore, then the present value is brought back based on a normal retirement, then it will have a negative impact on the fund. because the person is taking out the money before the person normally retires.
But they, you bring it back when you bring in present value, you bring it back to that point anyway for that portion that they would normally get.
You have to bring back a dollar amount. If that dollar amount is determined as a normal benefit, then you bring back that dollar amount as a normal benefit in the future. If you determine it to be an early benefit, in other words, at 50, then that's a lot lower amount that you're bringing back, which would give the spouse a much lower QDRO amount.
But that's a determination that they make when they cash in their check, right?
No. That's a determination that is made when the QDRO is defined. So, and the argument by the public plan is, and the way we proceed is, that when we work with a court on a QDRO, we estimate the person will exercise under normal benefit, normal retirement. That provides a higher benefit for the QDRO recipient, because it's not a reduced benefit, and it also gives the member the flexibility of retiring when they normally would expect to retire. There would be a negative effect if the QDRO recipient exercised at the earliest option. If that, if 414P were law as it is in the private plans, then for all QDROs, you just start assuming that the benefit's going to be paid out at the earliest time possible, which would give the QDRO recipient a much lower benefit, because the present value of that's not going to be nearly as high.
So if a person assumed, and I'm thinking about this as a proposed change or amendment or clarification on the effective date of this change, if the person went through a divorce last week, got a QDR in their hand, and then walked down to the municipality of Anchorage and said, I want to cash this thing in, and we now change the law to clarify it, what do you think the net effect's going to be?
Through the chair, Senator Szymanski, I think, first of all, we have to realize that the person can't just necessarily walk down and cash it in, because if the member is only 40 years old, that member's nowhere near normal retirement or early retirement. The person, the QDRO recipient, would still have to wait till sometime in the future when the person reaches the earliest
retirement.
But if they
are eligible for retirement.
Okay, if they're already at their earliest retirement point, and if what you're saying, if you clarified, that's a question that you'd have to pose to legal counsel. I certainly, can't speak to. I think if it is a clarification, then the plan could continue operating the way it has and intended to from the beginning, with their definition of QDRO as the federal government allows them to do.
Senator Rohde.
If I could take over from my plain-talking colleague from Erdwich. If we concluded that the existing law would allow QDRO for several of these that we're covering now, and stated that in a section of the bill, and stated that none of those would be disturbed. That would have the effect of allowing those that have been issued to go forward. Is that correct?
Nope.
If we said the law,
we'd be saying it wasn't clear. You could do it as early as possible. We'd be coming down on the side of those existing QDROs that are now gray. We'd say, you got to pay these people, but after the effective date of this bill, we aren't having any more of those. I mean, wouldn't we be coming down on the side of those folks?
Madam Chairman, Senator Rohde, I guess so. I don't know as far as the legal implications of that. And I don't know even how that would impact the state. I think if you came down, as you put it, on the side of the QDRO recipients...
The municipal ones.
But I'm just saying, if you came down and said that this is not just a clarification, I'm not clear, or I'm not certain what that would do to the state plans. Because the state plans based their operation on the assumption that federal law does not require how they define, and we did have definition of QDRO.
Okay. Is
so
it
I'm
all right
sure.
with everybody else that we get this research done by committee counsel? If we need to have an additional CS, that it seems to me that this committee, the general consensus is you don't want to affect the QDROs that are in the gray area right now that are iffy on the municipal level.
Yep. Madam Chair, I think it's good, sound public policy, because if people have, for whatever reason, they've allowed the QDROs to go forward, we don't want to disturb what is a either a right or a, an agreement between the parties. We don't know what we'll be doing, so it seems like the best public policy to let those things that have existed stay as they are, and from here on out, the rule will be as stated in this bill.
Senator Pierce.
So we would design this so that even actions, even, I guess, divorce actions pending at this time under which these could have an effect would not be effective.
We need to make a policy decision. Either they have to be in effect right now and they have already been through the courts and awarded, or you will allow pending ones prior to the effect of this date of this bill also, as long as they are concluded. So we need to make that decision as to how you want this amendment written. Is that correct, sir?
That's correct.
You said what should happen? Which way should it be?
Well,
I thought I heard.
He thinks the ones that are already awarded.
All those.
Is that giving him the Ramona problem?
Hers is awarded.
Those. The question is, what happens between now and the effective date of the bill?
Right.
And it's a decision of the committee. Certainly, those that exist now should not be disturbed. The questions, those that might be filed.
Senator Spansky.
Back to the country lawyer here. Now that we've had your gray suit routine on it, but let me see if I can figure this out here. You guys know
yours isn't purple either.
Matt, we've got a few stripes. But the concern that he's raising is still not going to be fixed.
We aren't going to affect the state. We'll make sure
we potentially could, though.
We'll be careful about it. But
here's how you end up doing it, because as soon as we make a clarification that in the statute that this now is prohibited, and we say it never goes back retroactive, and we grandfather in them that have already had QDROs, we are in effect saying they had founding and they had foundation to go ahead and present themselves, and not just those, but all ones back into history for 10 years could go back that do not qualify. So you got to remember, it's not just them. It's all QDROs that were filed, that were executed, would have the potential of coming forward. Why wouldn't I, 5 years ago, if I have a QDRO, have that ability to come forward and present my position?
Because we only did this in 1988.
Well,
1988.
The flaw in my good colleague's argument is the fact that there are only a couple programs that aren't covered now. One of them is the fire and police retirement fund is not covered, but TERS and PERS are covered by this provision, so they wouldn't be affected. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Rohde, PERS and TERS have had definition of QDRO, and we've excluded ourselves from this provision from day one. Now, whether Senator Szymanski's concern is valid, and there's probably a good argument for it, from 88 through now, of saying all the people who filed QDROs with the state could then point to this bill and go, well, no, this says that you shouldn't have used your own definition, because they're saying now, from now on, you can use your own.
Right.
I understand.
And I don't know how that would play out.
Our distinguished committee counsel will enlighten us with his voluminous research.
You're talking about the third winner?
The official rather than the unofficial committee counsel.
Senator Hopper.
What is the public policy reason to treat governmental plans differently than private plans with regard to this particular case?
They had a better lobbyist.
Through the chair, Senator Halford. With regard to this specific case, I don't even know if I could identify a specific reason why this case should be treated different than public plans, except that you've had public plans in existence that have recognized these societal needs for many years before any private plans did. The reason ERISA put in that provision is so private plans would be forced to recognize QDROs and recognize that form of property settlement. We have for many years. To say that we need to change a system that's been in existence that actuarial calculations are founded on, to change, under a different definition than we have been operating, certainly that's a policy call. I can't really say that, point out any differences that I would see, between public and private plans in this specific case. If you're looking across the board, there's a lot of reasons that they should be different and treated differently.
Well, I'm just looking at this specific case. I mean, what is the difference in a basic standard of fairness?
Row grant a value of property that had accumulated through a time of partnership, or does it give the spouse the right of membership in a retirement system that they never participated in? Now, our definition identifies that there are property rights to value of property accumulated. And the way our definition works, QDRO satisfies, or we satisfy QDROs under that. We don't grant membership because we are a defined benefit plan. One person worked for the employer. Now, that a person accumulated a value in benefits and rights. That value can be split, but the membership rights are still to that person. And a QDRO does not deal with membership rights under a pension system.
I agree with all that.
Okay, but I'm saying that's the difference between the way we treat a QDRO and 414P would have the definition of QDRO.
You mean in a private plan, an individual, an ex-spouse, gets an ownership, a membership in the plan under federal law?
By allowing an ex-spouse to dictate when that spouse will, in essence, retire. Because that's what 414P allows. For the ex-spouse to determine when the ex-spouse will retire with the benefit as defined under the QDRO. And that's what the earliest time possible means. That's allowing that ex-spouse some form of membership in the system, as opposed to a value of
property. One more question, Senator, and we're going on. Senator Hopper. Okay, because we're not dealing with private things here. Well, we aren't dealing with private things here.
The comparison that I think is important.
Oh, well, then, ask your question. Okay. Any other questions on this particular bill? Mr. Christensen, do you understand what needs to be done? Very good. We'll see this first thing Tuesday before ethics. And tell Mr. Gray that we think we can solve the president's problem here. Next bill before us is Senate Bill 212, Labor and Commerce. Mr. Walsh, sir. This is an act relating to insurance and changing Alaska rules of civil procedure, changing Alaska rules of appellate procedure, and providing for an effective date. Senator Rohde and I have heard this bill in Labor and Commerce. It's quite extensive. The department has very graciously prepared, a thorough sectional analysis and a change between current law and this law, and it's in your packet. There's an overview, and I thank the department for doing that. Mr. Welsh, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be here. Don Koch from the division is also with me, and he is the one who prepared the section-by-section analysis. I need to point out that the technical amendments between the draft of February 6th and March 15th have not been included in the section-by-section analysis. We just discovered that sitting here. They are not major, don't affect the substance of the bill, and we'll get you an amendment to the section-by-section tomorrow. Mr. Koch has been intimately involved with this bill and can answer the specific questions. I did want to make a couple of general comments. This is the type of legislation that I feel Congress should have enacted with regard to savings and loans 5 years ago. Fortunately, we do not have an insurer insolvency problem in Alaska. All the indications are that nationally this is an emerging issue, and we in Alaska are in a better position and in a worse position at the same time because of the size of our market. We're in a better position because we have only one true domestic insurance company, and that company, from all indications, is very strong. We are in a worse position because in the case of an insolvency, it will undoubtedly be from what are called foreign insurance companies, meaning insurance companies from the lower 48. And our ability to regulate those companies after the insolvency occurs is substantially reduced. What this bill does is it strengthens the existing reserve requirements and the other financial requirements for insurance companies doing business in the state, so that as we go through on the yearly analysis of their financial statements, we're able to have a tighter standard and one in which the problem companies will pop out earlier. Right now, we do probably the most extensive analysis of foreign insurance companies of any of the 50 states, simply because we have to. We don't have that many domestics. Our financial examiners use 18 tests as they review the financial statements. Any company that has more than three check marks goes into a pile that is then looked at in much greater detail. This will raise those requirements, and it will mean that in terms of a secondary and a tertiary review, there will probably be more companies. I don't anticipate that it will have any budget impact for us, but it will mean that we're going to be able to pick up a company headed towards problems much earlier than we're now able to. For example, the reserve requirements, once those are increased, as a company that has had large reserves but their reserves are falling, they would not make it through the first screen now. They would not pop out. As the reserve requirements are increased with this bill, they would pop out. That doesn't necessarily mean that their certificate of authority would get pulled, but it means that we can put them on quarterly or even monthly monitoring, so that if their downward trend continues, we can work with the state where they are domiciled, we can work with the company and attempt to avoid problems for Alaskan insurers. As I said before, I think this is the kind of forward-looking legislation that is essential. I think the result is going to be that the likelihood of any Alaskan insured being hurt by an insolvency is going to go down. I believe that the chances of insolvency is going to go down because the regulators can catch it early and put in some reconstructive measures, and I think the public interest will be protected. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any specific questions, and Mr. Koch is more than capable of handling the specific ones if I'm not able to.
We requested Mr. Koch from Labor and Commerce to do this for us because this was a very, very long bill, and it's very difficult for a lot of us who aren't familiar with insurance to understand it. So what he did is gave an overview between existing law in this and what these changes are. And he's got a commentary in here which verbalizes a little bit of the focus of the changes. So what I'd like you to do is understand this and be able to talk about this with Mr. Koch, and you might ask him questions on format on this, and then what we'll do is take this bill up next week when everybody's had a chance to do as much studying as they wish to do on this issue. Questions? Mr. Koch?
May I are we still in teleconference?
No, sir, we are not.
Just to add a little bit to what Director Walsh has stated, and perhaps provide a little more detail. We've dealt with some of the powers of the Director of Insurance in here in his ability to examine insurers. There are some things there that tend to clarify his ability to conduct those examinations. For example, it has not been as clear as we might like that we're able to use a private contractor to go in and conduct one of these examinations. That has been clarified in this legislation. And there's a whole series of changes of this order that are, I would call them more in the way of clarification, things that we've been doing, but things that, in retrospect, we question our ability to have done in quite the way we've done it. So this puts into statute, I guess, some of the practices that we've been utilizing to keep up on top of these insurers. One of the things we've done here is we've enabled quarterly reports. We believe we've had that authority, but it's not stated as such. We also have put in a piece that allows us to get those reports, either the quarterly reports or the annual reports, on electronic media so that we can start using computers to get on top of these things. And that helps us a little quicker. We can make that requirement on the insurer, and they would be required to not only give us the written materials, the paper materials that they now give us, but also to give us the same thing on computer tapes or disks, so that we can put them in our machines and apply these tests the director was talking about directly. Speedier. There's a section that deals with increasing the capital and surplus requirements. This again addresses directly what Director Walsh mentioned, where you need a higher floor so that as one of these companies starts to go down, it hits the bells and whistles earlier. If you let it go down at the current levels, it's too late because they'll go crashing through the floor before you can prepare your order. It just gives us a little bit more of a margin for one that is in trouble to get at. So we've got the thing where we have a device to detect them earlier, and we've got a thing where we can give us a little bit more room to maneuver for when it is going down. There's been a an address of things. I should say the statute that we're dealing with has been basically unchanged since 1966. There's been, as you can well appreciate, a great deal of dynamism in this industry, in the insurance industry. And a lot of the things that were considered commonplace in 1966 are old hat now. And the statutes don't really reflect some of the new things they can do. So this gives us a little bit more of an ability, a lot more of an ability, to address some of the new technology, if you will, that the insurers are applying in terms of investment, in terms of how they reinsure. And then finally, if you do get one that has gone down, the rehabilitation section has been restructured substantially so that we can avoid some of the problems that we had when we had the Pacific Marine fiasco, for lack of a better word. Some of the things that we found, some of the deficiencies that we found in our statutes in trying to deal with Pacific Marine have been corrected in this legislation.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's not just a piecemeal thing, although it might appear that way as you go through. It's really a good deal more comprehensive, and it's it covers the full spectrum of those things related to solvency.
Mr. Cooper, Mr. Walsh, have you had a chance to look at this amendment that's been submitted by ERICA?
I believe so. Can I?
Oh, okay. If you, we will not take it into consideration today, but when the bill comes back before us, we will take it. Apparently, the Department of Commerce folks, you've looked at it and don't think it's a problem, but I would like you to have feelings about that one way or the
other. We don't have any problem with this bill.
Senator Szymanski.
What were the substantive changes made in Labor and Commerce?
Oh.
They couldn't have made very many, could they?
There weren't very many. There were basic. Well,
my understanding, and the other thing, is that this analysis doesn't include the original.
There's a couple of amendments, and they'll give you a couple of the amendments that were made in Labor and Commerce. That's what he said. Before we meet again, we'll make sure you get those amendments.
But it also doesn't include what the governor originally proposed. I guess what I was curious is, have we eliminated anything that the governor originally proposed?
No, sir.
So this is tweaking that went on in Labor and Commerce?
I would characterize what was done in Labor and Commerce as strengthening the bill. There were some areas that were found. Okay. There's a letter by the director to Senator Eliason dated February 26th, which goes through the amendments that were made. It's a three-page letter. The substantive changes that were made there, and I don't know that I would consider all of those substantive, those are discussed on the second page of that.
Mr. Cope, why don't you make copies available for everybody, and then
we'll bring these back. In fact, our supplemental submission to you is going to be this letter and an expanded version. Okay. But they were not any changes which I would say either affected the initial intent or its implementation. As Mr. Koch said, if anything, they made the bill better.
Okay, we'll be seeing 212 again. Thank you, gentlemen, very much.
Thank you.
House Bill 411 is the revisor's bill. The revisor's bill is relatively short this time, much shorter than I've seen it in a long, long time. Mr. Deardorff, would you give us an overview of the revisor's bill, and then I'll place it in subcommittee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. David Deardorff, Advisor of Statutes.
I'll take it.
This is not only the shortest one you think you've ever seen, it is the shortest one you've ever seen. It's the shortest one I've ever seen. I love it. Hopefully next year it'll be shorter. Then I'm going to leave. This year, it essentially is cleaning up one of our old nagging problems that you've seen in every revisor's bill, and that is getting rid of the darn initial terms of appointees to boards and commissions. We finally figured out how to frame a computer search to get all those suckers identified instead of waiting until we went through title by title. And so they're all in here. After this bill passes, they'll all be out of the statutes. And we're doing our best to keep them out. They keep creeping in governor's bills because the Brown Law keeps forgetting about how to draft bills. But that's beside the point. Anyway, we keep trying to get them out of there. There's one section, Section 2, which relates to a court decision and merely codifies the result of that court decision. It's something that's supported by the Department of Law and defense attorneys. It really is a defendant's amendment to the sentencing statutes if all the Department of Law strongly supports it. In fact, they asked for it to make sure that the statute clearly reflected what the law of the state is. Almost everything in here, though, is just a product of our usual review of titles. Everything affecting the Public Utilities Code has been approved by the Public Utilities Commission by formal action. I sent them a laundry list of changes I would like to see made in Title 42, and they approved about half of them. I didn't push the ones that they didn't approve, but they have to administer those laws, and I don't want to impose my good judgment in front of theirs. So everything in here that affects Title 42 has been approved by those people. That's really basically it. I have a very modest amendment proposed to the subcommittee that I think adds one bill section and cleans up a couple of things at the request of Laureato. It actually adds more, it adds another bill section also at the request of the Department of Law to change one word in the tax enforcement statutes and make it easier for them to be understood. That's about it. It's real simple.
You always say that, Mr. Jador.
It really is. This one I can say with an absolutely clear and ethical conscience is plain.
Seems you got amendment there on one of my bills just passed a couple weeks ago. I understand that one.
You know that one.
Oh yeah, I knew that problem.
That was a question whether it was cleaned up in a conference committee setting or some way like this. This seems to be the easier way to do it anyway. And I think this reflects what the proponent of the amendment really meant. Is my
Where
understanding.
Is that, Senator Sands?
It's the amendment
to 4121302 on marine parks. The management plan deadlines for marine parks.
Well, there were several problems with it. The floor amendment offered by that was adopted on the House side was put into permanent statute, which made no sense at all because, you know, even if you did it, once you do it, it's gone and you don't have to do it. And then the other element associated with it was, well, anyway, there was some.
What section of the bill is this?
It's not an amendment.
It's the amendment. Okay.
I do have a question. If I may want to run by one more with you that just came up recently that maybe need just could go into the revised version, and it's one that came up with Laureato the other day on fingerprints again.
No, not the teachers. That's
No. This is another one. Remember my famous bill 2 years ago that everybody was tearing apart social services for not implementing regulations on?
Right.
You want to know when Laureato and those guys implemented their regulations on the same bill?
Right.
Which directs them to take fingerprints from people?
This spring?
About 4 days ago. But now here's the good part. I ask, and I haven't finished up yet with them, the bill I thought was pretty clear. It said you can go down there and take an elderly lady, Alzheimer's disease, and so forth, and get their fingerprints. Or if you want to take a child down there, get fingerprints. Laureato, I think now thinks that you were supposed to go get your fingerprints from some private agency or somebody, take them down there, and give them to them. Well, obviously, it was never. I mean, the intent was, and it was part of the whole original thing when we did it, was that. The Department of Public Safety would take them because they're the ones that are qualified to take them. If you have every dime store guy at Ben Franklin taking fingerprints, doesn't make any sense. So
Public Safety won't take them anymore.
Now Public Safety. Well, in my bill, they directed them to take them.
But they won't take. They don't give them. They're two independent firms in Anchorage to take them, like the teachers. The teachers can't go down to Public Safety and have anybody take their fingerprints.
But under my bill, they were supposed to take them.
You need to call the commissioner. Are there any other questions?
The case where shall means may, subject to appropriation.
No, they even charge $20 for it, though.
They only get charged $12 downtown. Is there any other discussion for the revisor? Okay, I will take this bill into subcommittee and bring it back to you next week, hopefully, unless we get really bogged down in the ethics bill. Thank you, sir, very much.
Is something like that a revisor's type thing to get into?
It's kind of borderline, frankly.
Well, I'm not too sure what the issue is. I'm going to call her up tomorrow.
Can we adjourn the Judiciary Committee meeting?
Yeah.
Meeting's adjourned. Thank you very much.